So, Michael, Dr. Baker just did a testimony in front of the Congress just recently.
Yes, just on Wednesday, the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee held a hearing. And this is Senator Ron Johnson, who's the chairman, and the ranking member is Senator Gary Peters. Now, it was a very, very remarkable hearing, and I think all of us need to be paying attention to what's going on right now. For many, many years, we have all been in danger. Our electric grid is susceptible to many threats, and very little has been done to protect the grid. Well, finally, it seems that Senator Johnson is getting very frustrated with this, and he pulled together a hearing with some of the key players who might be involved in trying to protect the electric grid. A key among these is Dr. George Baker. Now, Dr. George Baker has spent his entire adult life trying to protect America from threats to the electric grid, such as electromagnetic pulse and geomagnetic disturbance, which is kind of a fancy term for solar flare. And we'll talk a little bit about why these are important and why we need to know about them and why this hearing was very, very critical. And moreover, what people can do, because we don't have to just sit by and be passive about this. We can take an active role in trying to fix the, you know, this threat against us right now. And the threat is that if the electric grid went down for a long period of time, nationally, which is completely feasible, it could happen under a number of scenarios, literally thousands or tens of thousands or millions of Americans could perish.
Right. The projections are, so when you're talking a long period of time, how long are we talking about? Are we talking about 10 days? Are we talking about a month? What are we talking about?
We're talking about possibly months or longer in a worst case scenario. So now we recently saw in Hurricane Maria out in Puerto Rico, people without power for months.
And well, they still haven't.
Yeah, they still haven't completely fixed it. I mean, it's a mess. But people literally, entire, you know, villages and cities, you know, were without power for months. And people were actually, this is a little less well known, but people were actually without potable water for months. They were drinking water from potentially contaminated sources. And even though this disaster was, you know, limited in scope to the island of Puerto Rico and elsewhere in the United States, we weren't really affected by the disaster, so we could bring in massive federal resources into Puerto Rico, and it was still that bad. So now just imagine if a cyber attack or some other type of attack took out the U.S. electric grid for a long period of time. Where would our help be coming from if potentially the entire United States was the disaster area?
So I'm ruling out Russia because they may be the bad player in the whole thing. I'm ruling out China because they're probably the bad player. I don't know that anybody has resources that they could help the whole of the United States. They might be able to help a pocket or two. So
yeah, and even, you know, even if, you know, people in the world wanted to help us, just look at the difficulties they had in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, when the entire United States was sending massive resources in, right, and the international community was trying to help them, and it was still that bad. You know, think of this. We still don't know how many people died as a result of that. We still do not know for sure how many people died in Puerto Rico as a result of the aftermath of Hurricane Maria. And there was a recent article by the New England Journal of Medicine where they were trying to figure it out. And at the time, the government of Puerto Rico was saying 64 people, I think it was, or right, 84 people, something like, it was under 100 people that they estimated had died. And the New England Journal of Medicine estimated thousands, you know, as a result of, many of them died as a result of lack of medical care because of the outage of the electric grid down there.
Right. So when we lose electricity, you can't you can't refrigerate those diabetic
medicines.
Anything that requires refrigeration is gone, right?
Right.
Anything that requires oxygen or anything like that that requires electricity to run is done.
Right.
So,
You know,
those are just minor things right now.
they are, but you know, when you think about it, and like most people in America, you know, we flip on the light switch and we expect it's going to go on.
Right.
And, you know, we've all experienced some power outages before, but they're minor. You know, they're short, a couple hours, maybe a couple days at the most.
How long was the one in New York City back in the 90s?
The Great Northeast Blackout of 2003, that one was only about 2 days. And then the 77 blackout, and this one's interesting, the 1977 blackout was only 24 hours. But in that 24 hours, 1,600 businesses were destroyed, 1,000 fires, you know, caused by arsonists, 3,776 people arrested, and they had to call in the National Guard for a 24-hour power outage. So, you know, power outages aren't always benign.
Right.
You know, they can be very, very dramatic. A lot of people can lose their lives. But the ones we've seen in the past, you know, have just been kind of localized.
Right.
There's a disaster area, and then there's outside the disaster area where you can bring in help.
Right.
But what this hearing was talking about on Wednesday was a power outage caused by an electromagnetic pulse or a geomagnetic disturbance, which these would be power outages that could cascade over a significant portion of the entire country and could last for a very, very long period of time. We're talking weeks, months, or longer.
And at which point, there have been projections that we could lose 9 out of 10 people at that point.
Correct. Actually, the Senate Homeland Security Committee in March of 2017, in their report, they said that a successful nuclear electromagnetic pulse against the United States could result in the death of 90% of the American population. So now, you know, a lot of people might think, oh, well, you know, 90%, you know, that's crazy. You know, these doomsayers, blah, blah, blah. Okay. So let's say they're wrong by half. Let's say it's only 40%. That's still millions and millions of people.
Right.
It's not acceptable. If it's, you know, 2%, millions of people, that's not acceptable. So no matter what percentage you want to say it is, if we lose the national electric grid for any, you know, period of time, we are going to have a significant number of deaths in the U.S. population.
Right.
And, you know, the unfortunate thing is it's preventable.
And known to be preventable for years and years and years. And so it was interesting in this hearing that Representative Johnson is getting extremely frustrated that they're not getting anywhere, and the industry itself doesn't seem to want to self-regulate in any way.
Yeah, they certainly don't. So this kind of, when you look at this hearing, it points to a much, much bigger problem that I've been writing about for a long time. And anybody who wants to go into depth on this, especially if you have no trouble sleeping at night but would like to have trouble sleeping at night, I would suggest you subscribe to my blog, because I talk all the time about the threats to U.S. electric grid, and particularly why we can't seem to fix them in the United States. And it's because of the regulatory structure we have. The grid is self-regulated. So let's take a step back. And what is the grid? So the grid, the U.S. electric grid is actually the largest machine in the history of mankind. The electric grid, it is the biggest machine in the entire world, the biggest machine in history. Now, this machine actually is not owned by one person. It's not owned by the government. It's owned and operated by approximately 2,000 different companies, public sector and private sector companies, that own and operate little pieces of this big, interconnected, vulnerable, delicate machine. And these 2,000 companies regulate themselves. So the federal government can't tell the grid, I'm doing the air quote thing here, but the federal government can't tell the grid to harden itself. It can tell the grid, we want you to write rules, you know, that your constituents will, you know, then adhere to. And then the grid goes and writes its own regulations. Isn't that awesome? That right. When you can write your own regulations to regulate right. yourself. I sure wish I could do that, but I can't. Regulations are written for me. But with the grid, they write their own regulations. And what we have found over time is that the grid is only willing to do, the companies in the grid are willing to do the minimum necessary to kind of keep the government from doing something drastic, like enacting more legislation to regulate them further.
So there's really no penalty for not following it either.
That's a very, very interesting point. So, you know, the grid as a self-regulated entity has a nonprofit corporation that actually is supposed to be the watchdog. And this nonprofit corporation is called the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, or NERC. And they're supposed to be the ones that are enforcing these regulations that they're writing, you know, along with all their companies in the grid. You know, they're writing these regulations, and then they're all supposed to adhere to them. And NERC is supposed to, you know, penalize these companies if they don't. Well, one thing that we found is that NERC is covering up the identities of companies that violate cybersecurity regulations, which is really, really interesting, since we know for a fact, and the U.S. government has been monitoring the fact, that the Russians and the Chinese have been inside our electric grid for the last 10 years.
Hold that thought. This is Michael Mabee with the Civil Defense Book on the Karen Testerman Show on WSMN 1590, Nashua Source for News and Talk, and on WLMW 90.7 FM. So you've got NERC, the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, yeah. Right? And they oversee FERC. FERC oversees NERC.
Right, yeah. And this is a mind-numbingly complex regulatory scheme. And that is just exactly what industry loves. The more complex it is, the harder it is for the government to, you know, tell you what to do. So the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, is a small federal agency that historically kind of did a lot of the eminent domain type of things, such as pipelines and, you know, electric lines. And, you know, if you're from northern New Hampshire, you know, there's the Northern Pass
right.
Thing going on. And so the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission would approve or disapprove energy projects. And that was, you know, kind of historically what they did. And having a commission to do that gives politicians some coverage because, you know, that, well, you know, I'm not the one that did it. It was FERC, you know, it was this, yeah. It was this commission that approved this. So you could still vote for me because I had nothing to do with it. But in 2005, Congress passed a law which amended the Federal Power Act, and it gave FERC the power to regulate the reliability of the electric grid. Now, in doing this, the electric industry had kind of lobbied, and in the law, they created a self-regulatory scheme. So they knew this was coming. This was kind of as a result of the Great Northeast Blackout of 2003. Everybody kind of freaked out and said, you know, we need to regulate this thing. So, you know, the industry, you're talking about billions and billions of dollars. Like, for example, Duke Energy alone, one of these 200 companies, 2 years ago had $7 billion in revenues. So, and that's just one of them. So you're talking about a multi-billion dollar industry. And they lobby, and they basically got a self-regulatory scheme for themselves where they get a nonprofit corporation, NERC, to kind of oversee their regulatory structure. So now if one of these companies violates the regulations that they wrote, this nonprofit corporation, you know, will be the one to levy the fine, and then FERC basically just has to bless off on it. So over the course of time, what we found is that the industry has basically taken a very minimalistic approach to protecting itself against known hazards. So this kind of gets back to this hearing on Wednesday and Senator Ron Johnson's frustration that for two decades we've been talking about the hazards of an electromagnetic pulse attack, which I'll talk about in a second what that is, and also space weather or solar flares or geomagnetic disturbance, which are a natural occurring thing which happens all the time and also threatens the electric grid. So for two decades we've been talking about this. Today, there is no standard to protect the electric grid from an electromagnetic pulse.
Do they even know how to protect the grid?
They do. There have been a great deal of federal studies. We actually had a commission to assess the threat to the United States from electromagnetic pulse, a congressional commission, which Dr. Baker served on, one of these star witnesses at this hearing on Wednesday. And the EMP commission put out about 12 unclassified reports, and those reports are all publicly available now. They talk about the threats to the electric grid and what we can do about it, how we can protect the various components of the electric grid. So we've got a great deal of knowledge. We've had a great deal of experience with this, a great deal of study of this. But what the electric utility industry is saying that we should do, now, so we know these threats exist. Senator Ron Johnson is saying, you know, we've got to do something about this right now. We've known about this for decades. We need to fix it. And what did the Edison Electric Institute say at this hearing? We need to study it further.
Oh, so now my understanding about this is that they've known since the 50s, I think it was.
1962.
60s. Okay. That there was this vulnerability. And we finally, two decades ago, finally established a commission to study it. So we've studied it for two decades. And I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he said at one of these things, you know, one of the problems we have, our biggest problem is perfection. So the whole idea behind studying is, do we have the perfect fix? Because they're hiding behind the perfect fix.
Correct. And that Ron Johnson refers to that as admiring the problem. So Senator Johnson was saying, you know, we've got to be done admiring the problem. And by admiring the problem, that is studying it further. We already know a great deal about it. And I can give you an example. So a geomagnetic disturbance or GMD or solar flares. So this is not a hypothetical threat. In 1989, Quebec's electric grid was taken out by a relatively minor solar flare. So, and this solar flare actually damaged equipment in the United States. It fried transformers as far away as Salem, New Jersey.
Wow.
And so we know that the sun can actually fry the equipment on our electric grid with these solar flares that it sends out all the time. So going back to your 10th grade earth science, the sun for billions of years in every direction throws out solar flares. It does it every day. It does it all the time. It's done it for millions and millions of years, and it'll continue doing it for millions and millions of years. Every 100 years or so, the Earth gets hit by a big one, a big solar flare, and those are called, for those of you geeks out there, a Class M CME, or coronal mass ejection. So once every 100 years or so, we'll get hit by one of these real big ones. A couple years ago, we missed one by a couple days.
So, Michael, maybe, of the Civil Defense book, what can we predict where it's going to hit? Or is this one of those things that they're so random, there's no way to do that?
Yeah, correct. We are getting better and better at predicting them. We may have a little. So unlike some other threats, like a cyber threat, you know, cyber attack or an electromagnetic pulse could happen suddenly and we won't know.
Right.
A hurricane, we see it coming. We know a couple days out. A solar flare, it's possible we could have a little warning before it hits, but we don't know that for sure. And as our technology gets better and better, hopefully we will have more early warnings. But there are a lot of variables that come with solar flares and how they interact with the atmosphere. So we can't always be 100% sure. But what we do know for sure, and we can say with 100% mathematical certainty, is the Earth will get hit by solar flares. And we will get hit again by a large solar flare. We just don't know exactly when. It might be 6 months from now. It might be 10 years from now. The last really, really big solar flare we had was in 1859. So, it's 2019. We're a little bit overdue for another big solar flare.
Because you said approximately every 100 years correct. We get hit with one.
Right. And you know, we can see this, you know, historically throughout the Earth's history. They have ways of determining, you know, approximately how often the Earth gets hit by these things. So every 100 years or so, we get hit by a big one. So in 1859, we had no electric grid. We had telegraphs.
Yes.
Back then, that's
yes.
all we had. So when this solar flare hit, it charged the telegraph wires, shocked the telegraph operators, and actually set some of their equipment on fire.
Wow.
And that was just with this old telegraph equipment. So now, fast forward to 2019, everything we have is electronic.
Yes.
Everything is connected to the, you know, the electric grid, the Internet of Things, everything is, you know, very, very susceptible electronic components.
Right.
Everything that we depend on to live in the United States comes through a dependency on the electric grid. So all of our critical infrastructures and, you know, even things as simple as being able to go to the ATM and take money out from the bank,
right.
you know, is dependent on the electric grid. The transportation infrastructure, food, fuel, the medical infrastructure, everything. So if the electric grid goes out, you know, from something such as a solar flare, which we are not protected right now, as we sit here and talk, our electric grid is not adequately protected against anything, against cyber, against solar flares, against, you know, GMD, electromagnetic pulse. And you have to ask yourself, well, why is that if we've known about this for decades? And basically, it's because the regulatory structure has allowed the electric grid, all these companies, to kind of delay doing anything other than what's convenient or right. inexpensive to do.
Well, if you talk to any of the electric companies, very few of them, when you're talking about any dangers or anything, they're talking about structural. So we've got the lines, we've got the linemen that'll go out, and we can call on other linemen from other locales to come
right.
in and help us out. So where, how, you said that NERC, the North American Electric Regulatory Commission, I got it finally, is a nonprofit. Where do they get their money?
Oh, well, that's interesting. They get their money from the companies that they regulate.
Okay.
So these 2,000 companies in the electric grid have to pay in to NERC, who is their regulator. So that's pretty convenient that, you know, you're paying for your... Well, I suppose in America we do the same thing via taxes, but at least, you know, we vote. As citizens, do you have a vote in the regulation of the electric grid? Well, that's interesting. So the way NERC is set up, citizens were supposed to be stakeholders in this. So we were supposed to have a voice. So when NERC set themselves up, they gave the industry 9 votes, they gave the people 1 vote, and they gave the government 1 vote, and they gave big electric customers 1 vote. So basically, the customers and the government get 3 votes, and the industry gets 9 votes. So that's your voice in regulation.
This sounds like the Delphi technique where they load the committee up with people who have their predominant viewpoint, and then they assign a small number to the opposition viewpoint so that when you have the discussion, you come to a conclusion, everybody knows that they had a voice at the table.
Absolutely. And I actually think it's much more sort of the Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. And that's basically what the electric industry is telling all of us, because since July of 2010, we've uncovered that they've covered up the identities of violators of cybersecurity regulations. So for 8.5 years, NERC has covered up the identities. So when you think about our regulatory structure in the United States, and, you know, the United States, you know, we're a free country. And part of what makes us work is that we have a free media. We have, you know, the ability to speak our minds, and we have the ability to look into what our regulatory structure is doing and raise our voices if we don't like it. And that is being taken from us. So, you know, the grid is regulating itself, but they're not allowing us to look to see if this regulation is effective. And what we're finding is it's not effective. So in 2009, the Wall Street Journal ran a report talking about the Russians and the Chinese being in the electric grid. Now, that was 2009, 10 years ago.
Right.
Last month, the Wall Street Journal, January of 2019, the Wall Street Journal ran another report about the Russians and the Chinese in the electric grid. It's been a decade. So,
and we're not doing anything at
all
about it.
And we're not kicking them out.
Yeah. So this is Michael Mabee from the Civil Defense Book on WSMN 1590, National Source for News and Talk, and WLMW 90.7 FM in Manchester. Hi, Lynn. Lynn's on the Facebook. She said, great show. Very, very important information. Thank you very much, Lynn. And you can join us on Facebook on WSMN 1590 Nashua. Michael, you alluded to it. The NERC has been reporting over the last several years that how many incidents have they had where there's not been a non-compliance with the rules?
Ah, well, that's very interesting. And I call this NERC cybersecurity incident shell game. So for the last 3 years, NERC has reported that there have been zero cybersecurity incidents.
Zero.
Zero.
Well, but what about the one out in San Jose, where they there were pot shots, basically, through high-powered rifles to take out a whole group of transformers? Is that not considered a cyber attack?
Well, that's actually considered a physical attack, but that's also very interesting because that happened several years ago, where we had a physical attack against a transformer in Metcalf, California. That was actually the U.S. Navy SEALs went out and surveyed this, and they said it was a professional attack. This the industry tried to brush it off as vandalism. But
amateurs.
It wasn't. It was a coordinated attack. The people went in, they went down into a manhole, they cut the security cameras, they cut the security lines, they exited, and with precisely aimed rifle fire took out several transformers with direct hits from rifle fire. So we're not talking about a couple of kids plinking with a .22.
Well, that sounds a little bit like
it sounds a little bit like a dry run for a terrorist attack,
perhaps.
So people who really knew what they were doing. So now, you would think that after that, there would be a focus on physical security of these really, really critical transformers. So how many regulatory actions for physical security do you think there have been since then? One. That's it.
One reported.
In the where they went in and assessed a fine for violation of physical security regulations.
Yeah.
So, you know, after this, they put into place physical security regulations to allegedly attempt to protect these facilities, and they haven't been enforcing them. And it's basically the same with the cybersecurity regulations. They've been, NERC and the electric utility industry has been fighting having to do more stringent cybersecurity standards. And actually, Karen, you joined us last year in fighting to try to get better cybersecurity standards.
Right.
And, you know, we found ourselves as a bunch of citizens kind of arrayed against this entire industry that was saying it's much too burdensome to have some more stringent cybersecurity standards. So, my friends, apparently the safety of you and your families is too burdensome for the electric utility industry.
It's mind-boggling. The whole Charlotte's Web that's being, you know, perpetrated on the American people. So, is there something that our listeners can do that would facilitate calling attention to this and maybe even impacting the NERC and FERC to actually take some action.
Yeah, there actually are a couple of things that you can do. And I would encourage everybody listening to me, if you're appalled by what I'm saying, please don't move on to the next thing. Take that and let's do something about it. We really need a grassroots effort. So there's a few things we can do. Number one, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, which is the only federal agency that's got any jurisdiction over this. It's not, Department of Homeland Security has no jurisdiction to tell the grid to do anything. The only agency that possibly could help right now in our current structure is the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. We need to get new commissioners on that commission that will take the security of the electric grid seriously. Unfortunately, for the last 15 years, the commissioners that we've had have come from the industry. And when they've been done with their time on the commission, they've gone back to industry. So it doesn't seem to me like they've been very motivated to make any waves or to do anything that industry didn't want them to do.
Especially when that's the fox watching the hen house, right?
Absolutely.
So again, Michael Mabee with the Civil Defense book. Now, and if you'd like to read his book, you can go to thecivildefensebook.com and you can actually get your free download of the Kindle version today. So so where can, you know, if people wanted to get involved here and they realize that something's going on and they'd like to see a new commissioner, how many openings are there at this point?
There are going to be two openings. Right now there's one because one of the commissioners unfortunately recently passed away.
Okay.
And then a second, that was Kevin McIntyre, just passed away. And then a second commissioner, Cheryl LaFleur. And so the commission actually right now, because we have a Republican administration, will be three Republicans and two Democrats or independents. So right now, President Trump has the ability to nominate two. He can nominate one, and then we've got another one that will be coming open very soon. What you can do is if you go to the White House's website to contact President Trump, you can actually send him an email right on the White House's website, whitehouse.gov. You can send him an email and say that we need to nominate a commissioner to FERC that's not from the electric utility industry, somebody that's going to take the security of the electric grid seriously. If you don't want to do it via the website, you can write him a letter. And actually, on my website, I've got all the information on how to do this.
So that's the Civil Defense
Book.com. Just go to Mike's blog and it'll tell you exactly how you can take action, you know, by contacting the president about these FERC appointments. The other thing you can do is contact your senator or your representative. And, you know, up here in New Hampshire, you know, we've got Senator Shaheen,
right.
We've got Senator Hassan, and my representative happens to be Ann Custer. I've been in touch with all of them because actually this is a bipartisan issue, and we've got both Democrats and Republicans in the Senate and in the House.
Well, it's an American issue at this point, and it's something for all of us to get involved in some way. So, if they go to your blog, they can find out the address and
correct.
There's links and everything so that it makes it a little bit easier. They don't have to go hunting.
Correct.
Just go to the civildefensebook.com
and click on Take Action. There's a link for Take Action, and that'll let you know exactly how you can. But we need to be heard, Americans. We
right.
do.
If we don't, need independent voices on there, not just the fox watching the hen house all
yes.
the time. So do you have any suggestions on who might be a good one?
I do. We have a New Hampshire resident. His name is Thomas Popick. Thomas Popick is the founder and chairman of Foundation for Resilient Societies, which is an organization dedicated to protecting the electric grid. Mr. Popick is a veteran. He's been attempting to get the industry to harden the electric grid for years. He's been in this fight. He actually taught me a lot of what I know about this. I have learned from Tom Popeck. He's an American hero, and his only interest is protecting the electric grid. He has no desire to get a job in the industry, and he's willing to serve on FERC. So Thomas Popeck is exactly the type of commissioner that we need to get on FERC. And I actually, if you go to my blog, you'll see I have a article called Why Thomas Popeck Should Be the Next FERC Commissioner. Read about him, and if you agree, let's make our voices heard. Let's get somebody on the commission that actually will take security of our families seriously.
Right, absolutely. And this is Michael Mabee of the Civil Defense Book on WSMN 1590 Nashville, source for news and talk, and WLMW 90.7 FM in Manchester on the Karen Testament Show. And we're glad to have you with us today. So, Michael, at some point, I think I read on one of your blogs that there was a, besides this shell game that's going on, that there was a little nepotism happening or something that was with one of the commissioners that is getting ready to come down off of FERC. Is that right?
Yes. So Cheryl LaFleur, who is a commissioner who is not being extended. So she's the Democratic commissioner, and apparently Senator Schumer just showed her the door. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you need to applaud Senator Schumer for showing Commissioner Cheryl LaFleur the door. So Commissioner Cheryl LaFleur is the longest serving commissioner. She's been there for about 8.5 years. And interestingly, she started in July of 2010. You know what else started happening in July of 2010?
No.
NERC started covering up the identities of the companies that were violating cybersecurity regulations. So now the other FERC commissioners who are presently serving have only been on for at the most 2 years. So Chairman Chatterjee was appointed by President Trump, I believe, in 2017. The rest of them have come like in 2018. But Cheryl LaFleur has been there for years. And so she's been the regulator who's been there for the entire time that the Russians and the Chinese have been in the electric grid. And I am sorry to say Commissioner LaFleur has not made us safer. So best of luck to you, Commissioner LaFleur, but you don't need to be in FERC anymore. We need to get somebody in there who's going to take the security of the electric grid seriously. So whether you're a Democrat or Republican, as I said, this is a bipartisan issue. We've got both Democrats and Republicans in Congress that are interested in this, but we all need to be talking to them. You need to talk to your senator. You need to talk to your representative, even if they're on the other side of the aisle from
right,
you,
right.
And say, hey, we can all agree that the security of the electric grid is important to all of us. It's important to the economy. It's important to all of our lives. You know, can we get something done to protect the electric grid? Can we get Thomas Popeck nominated to FERC? Everybody needs to take action.
That's our... my little alarm going off again, taking me into things. So tell us a little bit more about what we need to do locally to
sure.
take care of ourselves to protect. I mean, what can we do even within the city? Are there any firewalls that through the cyber area that we could that are established so that it doesn't just cascade from, say, we get a tree down or something in Ohio, and then that's the one that caused the New York blackout a few years ago. Is there anything that has been established around New England that would sort of keep that cascade from hitting us?
Yeah. Well, now, one thing I would like to say up front, so I want everybody to realize, you know, those people that we see out in the utility trucks that every day are working to keep the lights on for us, they are all heroes. So any criticism I have of the electric utility industry is much more directed towards the management of those companies, not the workers that are there every day trying to keep us safe. Now, there are places in the country that have what are known as microgrids, where if the power goes off elsewhere, they're able to kind of island themselves off and generate their own power. I'll give you one example in New England, although they don't generate, but Wallingford, Connecticut has its own electric grid. And during the great ice storm of 2011, when literally the entire state of Connecticut was out of power, Wallingford still had power, because they maintain their own electric grid, and they do a very, very good job of maintaining their electric grid. Now, they don't generate. So if the entire grid, including the generation and transmission, goes down, they're going to be out of luck along with the rest of us. In our local communities, what I would recommend everybody do, find out if your local community has a community emergency response team or a medical reserve corps. Talk to your local emergency manager. In Nashua, Nashua is very, very blessed to have Justin Cates as an emergency manager here in Nashua. He's fantastic. He's very, very progressive, and he thinks a lot about things that Nashua can do to make itself more resilient. It's not always the case all over the country. So you need to engage with the emergency managers in your community and find out what can we do to make our community more prepared. Please download my book. It's for free. And what this book is about your community being more prepared. So if you download the book, free on Kindle today, just go to my website, civildefensebook.com. It'll give you some good ideas of what to talk to your emergency manager and your community about. Because the federal government and the electric grid utility companies have not stepped up to the plate to protect us in the last couple of decades from these threats, what we need to do is focus on our local preparedness for a long-term power outage. Now, that also helps with the national security of the U.S., because right now we're a big juicy target, and the Chinese and the Russians are looking at us saying, well, if we really want to hurt America, we can take out their electric grid, and they're not prepared. So what we need to do on the local level, community by community, is not be that big soft target. The more prepared we are, the less tempting it is for a bad actor such as Russia or China to do a cyber attack on us. If all of our communities were prepared for a long-term power outage, then it would not be tempting at all to initiate some type of attack like that on us. But right now, the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, the North Koreans, and the sun, for that matter, everybody knows that we are unprepared for long-term power outage. And moreover, there's no possible way presently for the United States to survive a long-term power outage. We have to work on that now, community by community.
So what kinds of things can people do? Just some practical things.
Right. You want to think about both as a family and also as a community, food, water, shelter, and security, because those are the things that are going to kill people in a long-term power outage. And I'll give you a great example is water. There are a few things that we could do as a community which would save tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lives in a power outage. One of the things that is going to kill people in a long-term power outage is waterborne diseases. Right now, we turn on our tap, clean water comes out. If that stops happening, people will start getting water from unsafe water sources, you know, streams, ponds, wherever. And moreover, these water sources are going to become contaminated because of the power outage. But by doing a couple of simple things, getting the EPA water purification fact sheet out to people's houses, towns storing some calcium hypochlorite or pool shock to be able to purify water, we can take some very, very easy, inexpensive steps, and people do not need to die of waterborne diseases. That's literally one of the easiest ones to fix, but presently we are not prepared. If a power outage happens today, none of our communities are prepared to deal with just the water issue.
Right, right. So, and some of the things that you talk about, getting your community prepared. So who do people contact to try and, because I know this, there are some organizations already in place that could, if we just add one or two more people, mm-hmm. that expands our ability to now protect our community a little bit better.
So. Yep, absolutely. So what I would do is wherever you live, contact, if you're interested in getting involved, contact your emergency manager at your town. If you don't know who it is, call your town hall, say, you know, I'd like to speak with the emergency manager.
Right.
Sometimes it's a fire chief, sometimes it's a police chief, sometimes it's somebody else, depending on the town. And find out if there is a CERT team, a community emergency response team in your town. And if there's not, talk to them about maybe starting one up and getting some other people in the community involved in trying to get our neighbors prepared for an emergency. I've been up here in New Hampshire talking to community emergency response teams now about emergency preparedness and preparing for long-term blackout for quite some time. And these are groups of people who are very interested in helping their neighbors to prepare. And you can be one of these people. So, you know, if this problem concerns you, don't just sit there and fret about it. Get involved. You know, write to your congressperson. Call your emergency manager. Say, hey, can I get involved? Do we have a CERT team? If not, can we start one? You know, we can all get involved and we can make a difference in our communities.
Absolutely. So if you wanted to contact your senators, I have their phone numbers. Isn't that nice? Senator Shaheen is 202-224-2841. And Senator Hassan is 202-224-3324. And then Congressman Pappas is at 202-225-5456. And Congresswoman Custer is at 202-225-5206. And here's a little clue that I learned yesterday, which is that if you really want to contact them so that they must respond to you, a letter works really, really well. But the other one that really works well, because there is a recording of it, it comes into the office and they have to respond to it. It's not just a check off on a score sheet. It's a fax. So Congresswoman Custer does have a fax number. That is 202-225-2946. 202-225-2946. And if you can find a fax number for any of the other three, that would help you make sure that you get your letter into them and makes it a little bit more important to them that they would allow you to get an answer to your letter. It doesn't ensure action. Nothing ensures action, but we do need your voice. This has been... the time went by really fast. This has been Karen on the Karen Testerman Show with Michael Mabee from the Civil Defense Book. And you can go to thecivildefensebook.com. And we've been talking about the EMP and the GMD. GMD that are threats to our electrical grid. Please be sure you check that out. And stay tuned for the midday with Jocelyn Davis, and tune in with George Russell tomorrow morning from 6 to 9. Oh, wait a minute. This is the weekend. Tune in on Monday from 6 to 9 on WSMN 1590, Nashua Source for News and Talk, and WLMW 90.7 FM.
Listening to 1590 WSMN Nashua.